Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Credit where due, January 1983. In early 1982, the Macintosh team began to hold off-site retreats about every 6 months. A retreat usually lasted 2 full days, including an overnight stay. We would travel by bus to a naturally beautiful resort like Pajaro Dunes near Monterey Bay, an hour or two from Apple's offices in Cupertino. Every employee on the team was invited, as well as folks from other parts of the company who were contributing to the project. The retreats were a mixture of a divisional communications meeting, an inspirational pep talk, and a company party featuring chats with industry legends like Robert Noyce, inventor of the integrated circuit, or Ben Rosen, the venture capitalist who funded Compaq and Lotus, and entertainment from Windham Hill artists like Liz Story. The third retreat took place at the La Playa Hotel in Carmel on January 27th and 28th in 1983, a pivotal time for the project. The Lisa had been introduced the previous week after 4 years of development, although it wouldn't actually ship for another 5 months, and it was becoming increasingly clear that it was time for the Mac team to shift gears, buckle down, and change our focus to doing whatever it took to finish up and ship. After the 2-hour bus ride from Cupertino, we gathered in a large meeting room to hear Steve Jobs' opening remarks. Steve was fond of summarizing the themes of the day into a few succinct aphorisms, which he called quotations from Chairman Jobs. The sayings from the previous retreat, held in September 1982, were, "It's not done until it ships," "Don't compromise," and "The journey is the reward." For this retreat, they were, "Real artists ship," "It's better to be a pirate than join the Navy," and "Mac in a book by 1986. Though he was technically a member of the Lisa team, Bill Atkinson attended the Macintosh retreats. With the Lisa now shipping, Bill planned to shift to full-time work on the Mac. His plans included creating a killer graphics application to be bundled with every machine. He was going to start working on it soon, and we were all excited to see what he would come up with. We focused on engineering for the first day of the retreat, which went by very quickly. Each member of the engineering team gave a short talk about their recent and upcoming work in the form of panel discussions, moderated by engineering manager Bob Belleville. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the formal part of the meeting ended for the day, and we had a couple of hours of free time to enjoy before dinner. I was about to join a group going for a walk on the nearby beach when I was pulled aside by Bill Atkinson. It was obvious that something was bothering him. "Do you have a minute?" Bill asked me urgently, looking kind of somber. "I want to show you something privately." We picked one of the small conference rooms, went inside, and closed the door. Bill was carrying 3 magazines, which he laid out in front of me on the table. 2 of them were very recent issues of personal computer magazines, like Byte and Popular Computing, while the 3rd was more business-oriented. They all contained articles about the recently introduced Lisa. He opened one of them and showed me an article with a sidebar entitled, "An Interview with Lisa's Designers." "Hey, that's cool," I told him. "You made it into Byte." "Look closer," Bill told me with a pained expression on his face. I started to browse the article and noticed that it included engineering manager Wayne Rosing, software manager Bruce Daniels, and applications group manager Larry Tesler. I finally saw why Bill looked so upset. He hadn't been included as one of the Lisa's designers. This was absurd, since he had done more of the design than everyone else combined. All 3 magazine articles featured quotes from Wayne, Bruce, and Larry, as well as Steve Jobs and John Couch, the top Lisa executive. But apparently no one thought to include Bill, even though he designed and implemented the most important parts of the Lisa almost single-handedly. Perhaps it had been because he wasn't a manager. Bill was very disheartened and told me that he was haunted by a similar incident that occurred 6 or 7 years earlier. He had done some groundbreaking work to create a detailed 3-dimensional animation of the human brain. He had scanned a series of brain slices and then wrote software to reconstitute them in an animated sequence, rendering them frame by frame to produce a spectacular movie that depicted important brain structures in stunning detail. The movie won various awards, and a single frame from the movie graced the cover of the October 1978 issue of Scientific American. But one of the professors working above him stole most of the credit, acknowledging Bill as only a minor collaborator in the published papers. Now it seemed to be happening all over again. I tried to cheer him up, telling him that the press was usually wrong about everything anyway. I reassured him that everyone at Apple understood his leading role in both the Lisa and Macintosh projects, and that there would be plenty of opportunities to talk with the press in the future. He told me that he was so upset that he was thinking about quitting unless Apple rectified the situation somehow. We both knew that he needed to talk with Steve Jobs about it, but he was nervous about bringing it up with Steve. I told Bill that I thought he was completely justified and that Apple ought to try to make it up to him. After dinner, Bill told me that he arranged to meet with Steve in private early the next morning before the day's meetings commenced. He surprised me by asking me to accompany him, to which I said that it wasn't my business and that I felt it was inappropriate for me to attend. But Bill insisted, telling me that he needed my support, if only to have someone else present to help ground Steve's infamous reality distortion field. Even though I knew it would be awkward, I agreed. We were both nervous as Bill knocked on the door of the small office that Steve was using. Steve opened the door, but he looked angry when he noticed that I was present. "What is he doing here?" he asked Bill, before turning to face me. "Go away, this isn't any of your business." "No, I need to have Andy here," Bill intervened. "He didn't want to come, but I asked him to be here to support me." Steve shrugged and decided to continue as if I wasn't there. "Okay, let's hear it, and you need to be quick because we have to start the meeting soon. What's the big problem?" Bill explained how upset he was that he hadn't received any recognition for his work on the Lisa, his voice hesitant at first but picking up conviction as he started to get emotional. He told Steve that he was thinking about leaving Apple because he was treated so unfairly. Even though Steve had enormous respect for Bill, he began to get annoyed, although you could tell that he was trying not to. "Hey, listen, I'm sorry, but you're overreacting and blowing things out of proportion," Steve replied in a dismissive tone. "Who cares about a couple of magazines? You should have been included, but you weren't. Someone made a mistake. It's not such a big deal." "That's easy for you to say," Bill retorted, upset at the lack of sympathy. He raised his voice, which was full of emotion. "I'm not going to work here anymore if you don't appreciate what I've done and treat me fairly." Steve took a step toward the door. He seemed impatient. "I don't have time to deal with this now. We'll straighten it out when I get back. I have 60 other people out there who are pouring their hearts into the Macintosh, and they're waiting for me to start the meeting." He opened the door and left the room without saying another word. Bill and I remained in the small office, unable to speak, emotionally exhausted from the intense encounter. After a few minutes, we heard a loud cheer as Steve made a number of announcements to kick off the second day of the retreat. Bill sighed, and we left the office to attend the rest of the meeting. The following week, Steve arranged for Bill to meet with Apple's human resources team to discuss what was bothering him. Bill reiterated that his main complaint was getting recognition for his work. After more discussions with Steve, they came up with a mutual agreement. The solution was to appoint Bill as an Apple Fellow in recognition for his work on the Lisa. Apple Fellow was the most prestigious technical position at Apple, awarded to only two other employees at the time, Steve Wozniak and Rod Holt. Now there would be two more, Bill Atkinson and Rich Page, who also made seminal contributions to Lisa. A fringe benefit of being appointed an Apple Fellow was a fresh pile of stock options, which could be quite valuable if Apple's stock price continued to rise. But most important of all, Steve promised Bill that he would receive public recognition for his work on Macintosh. Mac applications had an About box, a descriptive dialog box invoked by the first command in the leftmost menu, which would display the author's name. Furthermore, Bill could display his name in the title bar of the main window each time his graphics application was launched. Finally, Steve promised that the Macintosh introduction would acknowledge the people who actually created the design rather than the managers who supervised them. Steve was true to his word, and the seven people that he designated as the design team were featured in various ways during the Macintosh launch. Chiat Day even filmed us for a series of television commercials, which never aired because they were deemed too self-congratulatory. It was fun to have our pictures in the national press, but it was also problematic because there wasn't a fair way to draw the line. At least a dozen individuals made crucial contributions to the Mac design, so there were some hard feelings from the people who didn't make the cut. In fact, Steve eventually decided that giving recognition to the designers was a bad idea. Nowadays, Apple has abolished programmer names in their About boxes and closely guards the names of their designers, allowing only a select few employees to interact with the press.